Howdy, neighbors. Ron Hayes with you today on our Ag Perspectives podcast, coming once again from Denver at the 2018 Cattle Industry Summer Business Meeting. Our guest today, Kent Backus, the trade authority, trade guru, if you please, for the NCBA's DC office.
Let's start maybe with some fairly positive things that have happened in the last few days. The announcement or the joint appearance by President Trump and his the head of the European Union, that had to be a positive in that they're willing to talk about zeroing things out.
Yeah, we're very excited to see the possibility of some kind of trade agreement or trade discussions moving forward. They're still trying to hash out the details there. I think that when you look at an economy like Europe, there's obviously an incentive for us to want to open that market. Europe is a notorious violator of WTO agreements, of all kinds of science-based trade terms. They want to place all of their restrictions on the rest of the world, and they are dedicated to doing that. They have blocked many attempts to broaden the use of science and trade and use objective trade standards. They have taken punitive action against countries in Africa and Latin America for supporting science-based trade. And so, Europe really is a bad actor when it comes to the way they treat other countries. Mm-hmm. If you look at the U.S. specifically, we have a WTO decision against the European Union regarding hormones. That's a perfectly safe technology that's widely used throughout our industry. And yet Europe continues to violate that court order. And so
And they have since, the 80s and even, early 90s.
You're talking about decades of violation from these guys. And so we were hopeful that under the previous administration, when they were negotiating the TTIP or the Transatlantic Trade and Investment Partnership, it's basically like TPP, but for, the Atlantic Ocean, we were hopeful that we were going to get a lot of these things addressed. But Europe does not want to negotiate on agricultural access. They surely don't want to negotiate on anything that would water down all of the restrictions that they have on technology and production, whether it's, GMOs or hormones. These guys, they do not embrace science, no matter what they preach, and we've got to hold them accountable. So I think it's positive to see the administration saying, hey, you want to talk and you don't want these car tariffs coming on, you're going to have to work with us on ag. And that's good. We support, taking a firm position with them because, like we said, we've used the WTO. In Europe, who espouses all the benefits of the WTO, they pick and choose which decisions they want to live by. You can't just pick and choose the rules. The rules are the rules, and you're either going to play by them or you're not. And you're going to be held accountable or you're not. And President Trump is going to hold them accountable.
Of course, in the case of beef to Europe, we're even limited on the amount of never ever beef that we send to them.
That's right. Even the compromise, the temporary agreement that we have, which was made by our government in good faith to try to open that dialogue, Europe has been violating that too. They've been letting other people who were never parties to the WTO case, countries like Argentina and Brazil and Australia, in Uruguay, all of these other countries who've been able to send duty-free all of their beef under a quota that was created for us, and to some extent the Canadians, but primarily for us. Well, if Europe has proven they're not going to be a good trading partner, so you got to play hardball with them.
Kent, let's talk about what the possibilities are on being able to resolve this longstanding, since the 1980s, 1990s, decision that the U.S. has won, as you mentioned, regarding U.S. beef into the European Union. We can now only send a limited amount of never-ever beef regarding hormones. Can we actually get this thing addressed?
Well, the European Union has been pretty clear in the fact that there'll be no concessions on hormones and beef. They know that that's a lightning rod of an issue for a lot of their people. But at the end of the day, if they want to avoid tariffs and if this is part of the negotiations, then I don't know what options they have. They don't have the backing of the WTO on this. I don't know if we're going to get wide open access on hormones. I think there has to be something to address just the their blatant disregard for our current trade access, and the fact that, you know, the U.S. has not had has really not had steady access under this MOU that we've had. They've let other countries come in and do this. So I think there has to be some kind of victory that comes out of this. But this is also the European Union we're talking about. And, I mean, they have very heavy-handed tactics that they use, usually with much smaller countries, and they get their way. We saw what they did to Canada. We saw what they've done to Mexico, to a lot of other countries. But this is the United States we're talking about. And we have a president who believes in playing hardball and believes in and actually, you know, questioning a lot of these long-held things that have always been off the table. Well, we see this as being on the table. And if there's room to, you know, to actually have science-based trade, rules-based trade, enforceable, you know, quotas and standards with the Europeans, then we need that. And, you know, we're going to support every effort they have to do that. But at the same time, you know, we've made a lot of positive progress, it seems, in the last few days in this relationship with Europe. But that could all fall apart. And that could happen in a lot of different things. There's a lot of other factors that are out there. And so before we get really excited about possibilities, I think we also need to take a realistic view at who we're talking with, who our negotiating partner is, and realize the fact that they take, on average, about 5 to 6 years to negotiate agreements because they wear people down. That's how they operate. And they create their own rules as well. And so we need to see it for what it really is. And before we get too excited, I think we need to have that understanding. But I don't think that at all should take away from us encouraging President Trump and his negotiators from holding the European Union accountable.
Right. Same thing with China as far as beef. The deal that's just been in place for a little over a year now included that ban on hormones and on beta agonists. Is that something that could be on the table?
We have strongly encouraged the Trump administration to address the hormone restrictions and the beta agonist restrictions, as well as, you know, a whole host of other just terms in the agreement that we have that make, you know, some of the access just not commercially viable. We have strongly supported the president going after this, knowing full well that, you know, China, they're pretty set in their ways too. And it's going to take some time, and it's going to take some very hard conversations. But scientifically, China doesn't have a leg to stand on when it comes to these products, these compounds. If you look at countries that are their close neighbors and in close proximity, where we can send our product that has these technologies, well, those are some of our biggest export markets. If you can imagine, if we were able to get that same access into China, that same kind of, you know, unrestricted access, the U.S. Meat Export Federation estimates that our sales could be upwards of $4 billion annually into that market. So, yes, we are going to continue to support the administration trying to go after these restrictions. These are not based on science. There's no reason at all why they scientifically or realistically should have these restrictions, other than that they have those internal bans in their own country. Look, we respect the fact that a country can set its own rules and its own laws. But when you have restrictions like this that are not based on science, you need to address those.
You were telling me that we do have just a little sliver of hope that maybe the Japanese are willing to at least discuss some sort of a deal with us.
Yeah, we started to see some announcements coming from first the Japanese press and then the U.S. media, and then the government's finally weighed in and said, here's what's going on. We're hearing reports that there are going to be bilateral trade talks between the United States and Japan. Now, obviously for us, that is a top priority because Japan's our biggest export market. You're talking about a $1.9 billion market for us last year. You're also talking about a market where we've seen almost a 20% growth this year. So it's important that we have some kind of talks with them to take that 38.5% tariff down. You know, under TPP, we would have seen tremendous opportunity, tremendous growth, because we would have seen that tariff phase down to 9%. Well, we're not part of TPP. And Japan's wanted the United States to come back to TPP. So the fact that they're actually going to sit down and have a meeting, I don't know if it's going to be a formal bilateral negotiation, that has yet to be determined. But I think the fact they're actually going to talk, it's a step in the right direction, and we strongly support that. And we need that as soon as possible, because when you look at all of our competitors that have access in that Japanese market, the primary competitor is Australia. When TPP is finalized and when it's actually ratified by six of the countries, and I believe there are three so far that have ratified it, in Japan, Mexico, and Singapore. There are three more that are coming on probably in the next few months. You're looking at Australia, New Zealand, and most likely Canada. We're talking like the end of November, maybe December, that this will take effect. Well, when that happens, we're gonna face a significant tariff gap, a significant disadvantage to the Australians and the Canadians and the Mexicans and the Kiwis, who are all major exporters. They all want to sell that product in Japan. And while the quality's not necessarily the same as what we sell there on a price point, it's going to be hard for us to compete. It's also going to be tough because, you know, Europe has a trade agreement with Japan as well. And while we don't expect to see a lot of displacement on the beef side, they are major pork exporters. And if U.S. pork is displaced by some of the European pork, that could have a detrimental impact on us too. So it's important that we remain competitive in the Japanese market, and that's why these talks, they're a great first step, but we need a real tangible result in the next few months. Otherwise, it's going to be hard for us to prepare to move forward if we don't know that we're going to have long-term, you know, sustainable competitive access in our leading export market.
Right. Let's talk about the Trump tariffs. This has been an interesting development as far as that when the announcement has been made earlier this year that he was no longer going to accept the status quo, no longer going to allow people to pick on us, to be able to let us be kind of the punching bag for a lot of these countries, especially China. A lot of fear at that time, and that uncertainty continues.
Yeah, I think, you know, unfortunately, agriculture is we're a big target for other countries, and when they see the reactions coming from, you know, the ag community, they know they've got a sensitive point and they know where they can apply pressure, and so a lot of countries have doubled down on that. Europe, China, you know, Canada, and Mexico too. All that's for political leverage. You know, the administration came out and said, we're going to put this little package together. This is supposed to provide some aid, and we still haven't seen all the details of that. We're hopeful that we're not going to have to tap into all of that. But the tariffs are designed to create an incentive, leverage, if you will. They're designed to give an incentive, whether it's good or bad, for other countries to sit down and talk about things that they don't want to talk about. It's designed to have Canada sit down and actually talk about their supply management in dairy, which places tremendous restrictions on U.S. dairy exports into that market. You know, Mexico, we've got issues there as well. When you look at the car tariffs, you know, you're not just hitting on ag products. You've got, you know, auto restrictions. Auto imports face lower tariffs than our exports face going to other countries. So it really is about leveling the playing field. And essentially it's, okay, if you're going to keep doing this to us, then we're going to reciprocate. And that's what the president said, is reciprocal treatment. We will treat you how you treat us. Well, tariffs, they're painful. And while we're feeling it in the U.S. ag industry right now, industries in these other countries are going to feel it too. So we don't know how long that temporary approach is going to last. I think there's a united position across the ag industry that we want this to be as short as possible. We hope these other countries get the message, because it's clear the president is going to continue to move forward with this, and he's going to continue to apply tariffs. Mm-hmm. That is the direction the administration has chosen, and it's effective so far. it hurts for us because we need some stability for our grain producers, for our beef, our pork. We need that stability across agriculture. You know, in the short term, it's going to be tough. But I think at the end of the day, these other countries are going to feel the pain too. And that's the whole goal, is to try to incentivize them to come to the table.
I guess this is first time in decades that we've even tried anything like this.
Yeah, I think the end goal is obviously to try to have some kind of market access agreements. I think it's positive that we're still seeing the fact that the NAFTA talks are continuing, and hopefully we'll see some progress there. We may see something wrapped up by Labor Day. We need to see China come to the table. Obviously, the threat of $200 billion or a 10% tariff on $200 billion wasn't strong enough. So the administration said, "Okay, well, we're going to raise that up to 25%." That's in addition to the tariffs on $50 billion worth of Chinese goods already. China's going to feel the pain too. And you look at Europe, the threat of these car tariffs. That's big for them. But Europe doesn't want to talk about ag. They don't want to talk about U.S. agricultural goods coming into their market. They have a very protectionist, closed-loop system. They subsidize their agriculture heavily, and they try to put all of these obscure non-tariff barriers that aren't based on science, by the way. They try to put all of these in place to restrict trade. Well, if there's not an incentive for them to ever change, they're not going to change.
Right.
So if you can cause them a little pain and get them to come to the table, well, maybe that's the gamble that we need to take. And so we're looking at all of these options there. And I don't think it's lost on anyone that we need that stability, and we need this to happen as quickly as possible. Our message to the administration has been and will continue to be, we need that short term to be as short as possible. But do what you got to do.
Right. You mentioned the words reciprocal. Does that basically give us the kind of the get out of jail free card when it comes to WTO?
Well, WTO it's a tricky situation because we've also agreed, to use the WTO, and in some cases we have. When it comes with hormones, and it comes with other cases that we have filed. When it comes to some of these other tariffs. There's a question there, and China has filed WTO cases against the U.S., so has the European Union and others, in response to this. That's tough, and the WTO is so backed up with cases right now that it'll take a long time for, China to get any kind of decision from the WTO mm-hmm. on this specifically. But the U.S. has signed up and has agreed, to play by those rules too. And so that may be something that comes back and hits us on the other side. We've encouraged the administration to continue to use the WTO. We believe in using those international agreements, those rules of play. We don't need to step aside. We need to enforce them. We need to hold other countries accountable when they fail to abide by them and when they fail to enforce them as well.
I guess one thing we've done, for example, a WTO case against China on several agricultural products, grains, sorghum, wheat, this type of thing.
That's exactly right. And not just with them. We need some way that we can resolve these international trade differences. In the past, we used armies, and a lot of people died because of that. And, we don't want to ever come to that point again. But we can't let bad actors continue to get away by not living up to the promises they made. When China joined the WTO, they agreed to abide by the WTO standards, and they never have. Russia is another prime example of that too. The European Union, the list goes on and on. For the most part, the United States has really lived up to its end of the bargain, and we need to hold the others accountable.
Thanks, Kent. Kent Backus, trade guru for the National Cattlemen's Beef Association in their D.C. office. On the Oklahoma Farm Report, I'm Ron Hayes.